Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We are back. We will have Game 6 of the World Series tonight for you in Sportsnet 590. The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. First pitch set to fly around 8 o'clock. Mike Wilner will host a special one-hour pregame show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. His J-A-Day pregame show will be Aaron Sanchez, who will take your calls. And I'm sure somebody's going to ask him about going to the bullpen. That would seem to be the obvious question. And I'm sure he's going to tell you that the Jays have told him he's going to start. I'm not certain about that. Anyhow, Aaron Sanchez with Mike Wilner. You'll enjoy it. Aaron Sanchez, a guy with an original thought or two. So I couldn't think of a better person to get on. Well, there's no better person than Jonah Carey to get on to talk baseball. And there's no better person to get on when you're going to try to work a segue into Tampa Bay and Montreal, since he's written a book on both teams. So we're very pleased at this time to be joined by the one and only Jonah Carey of Grantland. How you doing?
Good, Jeff Blair. How are you?
Doing well. You had your fill of barbecue yet?
I did not go to Kansas City. I only did the San Francisco leg.
You only did the San Francisco, like you say, you only did the San Francisco leg. There's still a good restaurant.
My colleague from Grantland. Oh, no, I'm not taking it for granted. It was super fun. San Francisco is one of my favorite cities in the world, and it's a beautiful stadium. And my first time covering a World Series, so it was really cool.
It is?
Yeah.
What?
I'd never been to a World Series as a fan either. I'm 40 years old. It's the first time
I've
been to a World Series.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Come to think of it, because
I
haven't
seen
it.
I was a stock market writer for a long time. I only became a full-time sports writer in 2011. So even though I'd written books and done all this stuff, I just never been on the beat in that way and got to this year and hopefully turned out some interesting content and had a great time.
The best part of the World Series is when everybody goes and hangs around the field and does nothing for an hour and a half. That's my favorite part. Except they interview each other or find a former player who's now working for the media and get his take on it.
Totally. It wasn't even interviews. It was just me going around. It's like, oh, hey, Jason Stark. We talked for like 20 minutes, and, you know, I hadn't seen him in a while. And I don't know, just various writers that you don't get to see in person. The so-called jewel events, as they call it, where you all-star game, World Series, you catch up with these people maybe three times a year, winter meetings, and, you make nice. It's a camaraderie in this industry.
So my theory here is that the Kansas City Royals have San Francisco exactly where they want them. San Francisco's leading 3-2. Not to take anything away from Jake Peavy, but I think if you're the Royals, now I know the way you lost a couple of those games was, blowing the lead was gut-wrenching. But if you're the Royals, it's probably not that hard to find positives being where you are right now, is there?
There's a few things. So first of all, the last 10 times there's been a 2-3-2 format best-of-7 series, and the team down 3-2, like the Royals, went back home. 8 of those 10 times, that team went on to win. Down 3-2. They went on to win. So that's, you know, not good. I would also point out that Madison Bumgarner is not going to start any more games in the series, so that obviously helps the Royals a lot. The one thing that helps the Giants potentially is that hopefully they'll have an all-hands-on-deck attitude toward the bullpen. In other words, the Royals' bullpen is supposed to be the big advantage, but if Bumgarner gets to the pitch, let's say 2 innings in the 7th game, assuming there is a 7th game, and I'm a huge Yusmeiro Petit fan, at the beginning of the series, my number one key to the whole World Series, I said, Yusmeiro Petit has to be used early and often. I want him to start game 4. If not, I want him to be a high leverage reliever, and we haven't seen that. He did pitch great in game four, but they need him more. If they're going to use him and Bumgarner on top of Affelt and Castillo, who are really the only reliable relievers, at that point, it evens things up. Having said that, yeah, of course, you know, the Royals are in fine shape. I mean, there's no Bumgarner. They've been unlucky defensively. There's been all these bloop hits that have gone the Giants' way and not the Royals that could easily turn. And they're at home, of course, and they're a pretty good team. So I think it's very evenly matched right now. It could go either way.
The thing that has intrigued me about the Giants all season long for the most part, but especially down the stretch, and I pulled Yusimero Petit out in the first round when I did my look ahead as the guy that I was, in the NLCS, the guy I was looking at. I was looking at, you know, in a lot of ways, he's been one of the most valuable Giants, hasn't he?
He might be the second best pitcher on the staff.
Yeah.
He's really good. If you look at his numbers, there was one start in Colorado where he gave up 6 runs in 3 innings or something like that, which is completely irrelevant to his record because he's pitching at AT&T Park and Kauffman Stadium, two of the friendliest parks in all baseball. There is no relevance one to the other. So you take that out, and his numbers are off the charts. His release numbers are Mariano Rivera-esque, something like a 170 opposing batting average with like a 250 opposing slugging. They can't hit the guy. But even starting, he's been really good too. And he just kind of go up and down the line. You know, he can get righties out, he can get lefties out. His splits were a little abnormal this year, but in the past they've been more even or even reverse sometimes. He's got a good arsenal. He only throws by 89 miles an hour, his fastball. Mm-hmm. But he's just got incredible location. He had the third best strikeout-to-walk ratio of anybody in baseball with as many innings pitched as he had. I think the only guys who were ahead of him were like Kershaw and some other superstar, Wainwright, someone like that. So that was great. And the other thing that's in his repertoire is third highest fly ball rate in the National League, which sounds terrifying because fly balls sometimes go for home runs or doubles or triples. But the Royals are last in baseball in home runs this season. The Giants Stadium, AT&T Park, is the least friendly toward home runs in all of baseball. And now they're going back to Kansas City. That's the 23rd friendliest ballpark for home run hitters. So it's a perfect situation for a guy like Yusimero Petit. Just throw strikes, get him to roll over on ground balls or even fly balls, and you can go far in a game. I'm disappointed they haven't started him, but I hope they understand that, you know, PV and Hudson, these guys are not necessarily reliable options. They need to really, really lean on Petit. He should be their guy, maybe starting in like the third inning potentially.
Jonah Carey joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The other thing for the Royals too, they will have Billy Butler back in the lineup. He's got some good numbers against Jake Peavy. It's, you know, we're getting to the point now where I know the series isn't over yet, but I'm kind of interested in looking at the Royals in the way we looked at Tampa Bay when they played the Phillies in the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Royals have what it takes to return to the World Series next year? Or let me rephrase that, because that's hard. Do they have what it takes to be one of the teams people will be looking at next year to return to the World Series?
A lot of that depends on if they re-sign James Shields, to be honest with you. I mean, he hasn't pitched that well in the playoffs, we know that, but massively valuable in the regular season. And, you know, me, I'm a stats guy, but I also know a lot about James Shields, and he's helped them in other ways, too. He's been a real mentor to Danny Duffy, who's been a breakout pitcher there. And even just the clubhouse environment, the Rays famously after every game, it could be April in Houston and they win a 7-2 game. They have a dance party after the game with a smoke machine and lights and everything. Mm-hmm. On the road, doesn't matter, everywhere. They could do that 95 times in a year if they have to. And the Royals have done the same thing. I'm not contending that dance parties are the key to success. I'm just saying that they fostered an environment where everybody wants to be there, really, really wants to be there. People leave Tampa Bay and they're upset about it. Maybe that'll be the environment with Kansas City, too. Mm-hmm. Shields, you know, might say to himself, all right, well, I can make $70 million, whatever, making up a number, $80 million here. I can make $70 million as a Royal. Maybe I'll just stay a Royal. That would be the best hope for Kansas City, because if you subtract him, I do like Duffy and Ventura. They're good young pitchers, but you're missing something. You're missing 210 reliable innings.
Right.
That could really hurt the team, potentially.
And I know, Jonah, that Mark Topkin, amongst other people, he's pointed out often that a lot of the things that we associate with being good about Tampa Bay, about the Rays, a lot of that comes from sort of the groundwork that James Shields laid. I mean, not to hammer the point, but he's a guy who clubhouse life tends to revolve around, and he's very happy with that. And Topkin made the point that there's still a lot of carryover from, and he said you'll hear guys every now and then laugh about, well, that reminds me of something that Shields used to do, or that reminds me of something that Shields used to say. And that's really, when you have that, when you can leave that type of legacy, for want of a better word, that really says a lot about you as a teammate.
There's no question about it. The first day that Shields went to Kansas City, got traded, in 2013 I go to spring training. It's one of the first days of spring training, and I interviewed him for a while. I started asking him about that, about the raid, and he said, oh, I mean, yeah, you know, it was the most fun I've ever had in my life. I asked him, hey, you still in touch with David Price? I text him five or six times a day. And it's the same with Alex Cobb, and it's the same with Matt Moore, and these guys have a brotherhood over there. And if somebody pitches a complete game, and it's just a little goofy celebration, but they do kind of a flying five-way chest bump at the mound. And it's like this incredible competition. Like, as soon as Madden is even stirring in their dugout, they start shooting evil glares because they want that complete game so badly. And listen, I cannot tell you if it's causal or correlational. I don't know. But I do know that people really, he has this impact. He definitely, definitely does. And he teaches things, too. Look at Duffy. He really came along this year when he started throwing a changeup. Well, that shields his bread and butter as he throws a changeup to set up his other pitches. And even he's got something called the Bozeman dip. Bozeman refers to, you'll know, a great pitching coach named Dick Bozeman, many years a great instructor. And basically what that means is he kind of takes this exaggerated dip to kind of look at the plate and look back at first base at the same time. It's a very fluid motion, and it just paralyzes base runners. They can't do anything with it. Well, go look at Wade Davis. Wade Davis very rarely puts guys on base, but Wade Davis learned the Bozeman dip from James Shields, so nobody ever steals off him if they happen to get on base. And some of the other Rays pitchers have started doing that, too. There's a continuity there. You know, people talk about how do they have such good pitchers all the time. A lot of it has to do with instruction, but a lot of it has to do with, honestly, Shields, you know, took the lead. And some of these young guys that are coming up now, you know, down to Chris Archer and so forth, they have a Shields lineage.
You made the point that you're a numbers guy. You're not entirely a numbers guy, but you value numbers. Can you explain to me, is there a number or a statistic or some sort of strategic reason that would explain that the Giants generally are so good when it comes to closing teams out at this stage of the season? Is it just having been there before?
You know, this team is a little different than the 2010-2012 teams. I'd submit to you that this is a weaker team. They are by record, certainly, but if you look at the pitching staff, I mean, those past teams had Kane and Lincecum. I mean, this team, for all intents and purposes, does not. Lincecum is even in 2012, when Lincecum threw in relief, it was high leverage relief, not anymore. So they're getting by on fumes. You know, Peavy and Hudson and Vogelsong, not going to scare anybody, but they're making it work. You know, Bochy certainly gets some of the credit for closing teams out and just being effective. And I wrote about him recently for Grantland, and I basically said he's a future Hall of Famer, and which maybe is not controversial because he might win a third World Series, but there's a great book by a guy named Chris Jaffe called Evaluating Baseball's Managers, and he argued that Bochy was the 30th best manager in the history of baseball before he ever became a Giant, when he was at the Padres, and the Padres often had some not great years under him, but what Bochy does is he makes the best of what he has. So the Padres' case was really lousy teams. He turned them into okay teams. And the Giants' case, it's okay to pretty good teams into very good teams. So that obviously plays a role. I do, you know, it's possible that experience plays into it. I guess it's also possible, since I'm a math guy, that they're flipping heads eight or nine times in a row. It's not out of the question that that can happen. And, you know, I would argue that the competition in the playoffs was tough, but it wasn't. There weren't any overwhelming favorites. No, not in the American League and not in the National League. So this was a good year to maybe make a run. Maybe even more so for Kansas City, by the way. And all those things, you know, came together, and it's worked out great for them. The stat that kills me about the Giants: they went through a stretch of six games where they scored 22 runs. 12 of those 22 runs were scored on something other than a hit. That's like impossible. That's ridiculous. Think about that for a second. That means an error, a sack fly, a bunt, a walk, a hit by a pitch. I mean, just things that don't happen all that often. So, you know, I think that part of it, you have to say, is probably a little bit of luck. It's sustained luck, maybe, but I think that has to be part of the calculus.
Jonah Carey joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, I want to talk about the Rays and Montreal. Now, I think we're probably on the same page. We know the Bill Madden reported on Sunday that his sources said that Stuart Sternberg had talked to, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially talked to some of his Wall Street peers about moving the Expos to, or moving the Rays to Montreal. Now, that could be anything from five guys sitting at lunch and Sternberg going, I don't know, you know what, I might just move the team to Montreal. Or Sternberg, you know, finding somebody and saying, you know, what would you think about this? I think we're on the same page. That my first instinct is this is less geared towards getting the Rays in Montreal as it is to making a serious and maybe, and you know, I've been told one final attempt to get a ballpark, preferably in Tampa, like to go all in, try to get this done. If it's going to require baseball to spend a little money to break the lease, you know, they've given Jeffrey Loria money before to buy teams, that's what this is really aimed at. And then in point of fact, you know, the only way there's a chance that you would see the Rays in Montreal is if this thing totally collapses.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things to unpack here. First of all, that's right. There's leverage going on. And Bill Madden has been around a long time, obviously. Let me see if I could say this delicately. Bill Madden tends to side with the commissioner a lot, tends to write articles that are favorable toward the commissioner's point of view.
Yes.
Probably not a controversial thing to say.
No, it's very true. It's entirely accurate.
Okay. And this kind of story, which I'm not saying came out of the ether, something happened at some point, could be over lunch, as you said, but amplifying it in this way is beneficial to the commissioner's aims because the commissioner's aims are aligned with the owner's aims. Mm-hmm. The owners want free money, which I would like free money. Sounds good. So a free stadium would be free money. Talking about another city as a stalking horse is certainly a way to do it. One of the chapters in the Extra 2%, the book that I wrote about the Rays, is literally called Stalking Horse.
Mm-hmm.
How can we figure out a way to get our team a new stadium? The San Francisco Giants, allegedly, were going to move to St. Petersburg. The Detroit Tigers had conversations. The Seattle Mariners had conversations. Chicago White Sox went down to the wire in the state assembly. And there were all kinds of backdoor Illinois shenanigans that were done. So this is just the same thing repeating itself with Montreal. I don't think Montreal has the status yet to be considered a dangerous stalking horse way like Los Angeles would in the NFL, for example. But it's there. You know, it's been on the brain. People have talked about it a little bit, so that's that. As to whether it's imminent or whether this is the last chance before, I don't think it's quite that easy. Not so much because Sternberg wouldn't necessarily, like, it's out of the question that he would consider moving a team or selling to someone else would consider moving it, but because I think we're skipping a couple of steps with Montreal. You still need a billionaire. You still need a stadium. You still need support. You still need all those things.
What if Sternberg were to retain ownership, though?
Yeah, I mean, that's possible, but even then, you know, he still needs to be willing to ante up the money for a stadium elsewhere. And the thing is, there has been less appetite traditionally in the province of Quebec to build a stadium than like anywhere else in North America. And by the way, I'm pretty proud of my, you know, I grew up in Quebec. I'm pretty proud of that. I don't like the fact that you taxpayers have to fork over money. So Sternberg is in the same pickle. If he thinks he can build a stadium tomorrow in the city of Tampa, that's not the problem. The problem is nobody's going to give him a check. So if he thinks people are going to give him a check in Montreal, I don't know about that. I think that that's a long shot as well.
What do you make of the Madden and Friedman exodus? Does this have anything to do with their concern about the future of the franchise, or is it all about, in Andrew Friedman's case, a chance to apply your theory and make a great deal of money in a big market? And in Joe Madden's case, I have to admit, I forgot how old he is. You know, this is kind of the first time Joe Madden's been in the catbird seat, right? And do you think that those two interests are more of a factor than any concern that the Rays may be on the verge of moving, or that, you know, something untoward is happening with the ownership group?
Here's what Andrew Friedman is getting for his new contract with the Dodgers. Some of it has been publicly reported. Some of it maybe not, but I'm privy to it, and I'm happy to share it. Number one, he got a five-year contract for $35 million. That's a general manager. That's not a player. That's a lot of money, $35 million. That's number one. Number two, there's incentives, which include World Series bonuses and so forth. That's nice. Number three, from what I've heard, is that Mr. Friedman used to be involved in Wall Street. He used to work in private equity, you know, things like that. He was an analyst and so forth. What I've heard is that he would retain a position at Guggenheim Partners whenever his term as a baseball general manager is up. possibly even including running his own fund, which is a very, very lucrative thing. It's conceivable they could pair Friedman with someone who would do the day-to-day work. He gets to kick back in Malibu and watch his dollars pile up and have this prestigious job and not have to worry about it, because you're not going to be a general manager for the rest of your life. Things change. So that's really attractive. That's not something that the Kansas City Royals or the Minnesota Twins or any other Tampa Bay Rays can conjure out of the ether. That's the Dodgers thing. Guggenheim is a large, has more than $200 billion of assets under management. It's a gigantic financial company. Madden, as you said, you nailed it. I mean, I think he's 57 or 8 now.
Yeah, someone said he was, I can look it up. I can't imagine he's 60. I thought he was more closer to 58 or 59, but I mean, we're kind of splitting, you know. He's at that age. He's at that age where you'd like to be able to call the ball and where you want to go. That's probably the best way to put it.
He is 60. Actually.
Yeah.
So Joe Madden, and I've said this before, in many ways reminds me of Felipe Alou. Many ways. So many years riding the buses in the minor leagues. So many years cutting his teeth and learning his craft and figuring out what he wanted to do in the off chance, because it didn't seem that either guy was going to get a chance, probably for different reasons, I would say, which you know. But didn't seem that he would get a chance to finally manage. Gets the bench coach job with the Angels, works under Mike Scioscia for a few years, and then finally gets a job with the Rays. I think he was 8-9 years on the job. So he was early 50s by the time he got his job. So yeah, this is the first opportunity that he's had to do this. The Rays, from what I hear, and my sources are pretty good, made him a competitive offer, but competitive is not the same as what he could get on the open market, which could be huge. That could be like 525. Something like that is not out of the question at all. And if he gets the pick of the litter, he gets to look at any team for more money in a situation where I don't think the Rays are in terrible shape by any means, but it is a fact that their farm system, weirdly, it's not so much the financial stuff. They just drafted horribly for 6 years in a row. That's a big problem. You look at a team like the Cubs, obviously the Cubs have more money in Chicago. It's a lovely place to be. But the big thing is they're teaming with young players the way that the Rays were at the start of this whole journey in 2008, and that could be an attractive position. The Dodgers, in some ways, are an attractive position, although there's a Mattingly thing. There are all kinds of scenarios that could work great for him, including, knowing Madden a little bit, maybe just kind of walks the land for a year. I could see a scenario where he gets in his RV and sticks it on a cargo plane and drives east from Paris to Vladivostok for a year. I mean, that would not surprise me at all. He's just that kind of guy. He loves life. He definitely loves managing. But it'll take the best opportunity that it can find. And that might not be the first opportunity, because the only vacant job right now is the Minnesota Twins. That's not the best job out there.
Yeah, and this is a guy who went hitchhiking in Europe, or backpacking in Europe, same thing, for his honeymoon. I can see that. And the other thing I can see, too, is I can see some network. He could fill in for a year very, very well.
Listen, I work for Baseball Tonight. If Joe Madden wants to be my colleague, that'd be fun. I'm in.
Where do you think he ends up? Your gut call. Where do you think he ends up?
I think it's a tough one because he doesn't know. You know, normally when you make a speculation on something like this, you have either through sources or just comments that you have an inkling of where the person's leaning. He does not know based on everything that I've heard. So it's tough to say. I think that the whole thing that the Dodgers are impossible, I do not buy that. You know, they did make a commitment to Mattingly. It would look kind of bad if they went back on it. But like I said, maybe that scenario comes up in 2015. The Cubs are certainly a possibility. Rick Renteria is under contract there. God, poor guy has had to basically defend his job publicly. They've interviewed him and asked him. But that would make sense. You know, Theo obviously admires Joe Madden's work. But there could be another scenario. You know, the Atlanta Braves are sort of compelling. They have a lot of good young talent. Freddie Gonzalez, you know, the Braves are so obsessed with continuity. They had two general managers from, 1990 through Frank Wren getting fired. That's insane. And they had, how many managers have they had? Bobby Cox and then Freddie. I mean, that's been it since early 90s or late 80s as well. But Freddie's not a very good manager, to be blunt about it. He just isn't. He doesn't do a good job of getting the most out of his players. We've seen young guys stagnate under him. Certainly in all the tactical stuff, he's, you know, from a sabermetric point of view, not good. So that could be an interesting scenario, too. And Atlanta has its charms as well. So we'll see. I think that there are all kinds of things that could fit. I'll tell you that Joe Madden, he's an old-time St. Louis Cardinals fan. He loves the National League style of baseball, man. He loves to tinker, double switches, all that stuff. So if he wants to challenge himself intellectually, I don't think the National League is that different than the American League, but it's a little different. Mm-hmm. That could be an appeal to him as well.
You know, and I wonder, too, you mentioned St. Louis, and I know a couple of people, people like Will Leach and other people have written the same thing, that even though Mike Matheny's got that contract extension, boy, if you're Joe Maddon and you take a year off and, you know, things don't work out all that well in St. Louis, there's an organization that there might be a little bit of sort of philosophical simpatico, if you want to call it that, happening.
Well, yeah, I mean, John Mozeliak, sure. You know, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure they would get along well. Maddon, like I said, he was an old-time Bob Gibson fan. I mean, that was his jam, you know, growing up. And that's possible. He's, you know, contemplated it. This would have been the third time he would have re-upped with the Rays. So it's not exactly correct to say that it's the first time he had an opportunity.
Right.
It's just that his profile has never been better than it is right now, even though they're coming off a losing season. So that could be interesting. Matheny's another guy. I'm not a big Matheny fan. I'm just not. I just don't think he's a great manager. I think the reason that they're successful for the most part is that they draft well and they develop well. I mean, they just keep churning out. Pujols leaves, fine, we'll bring in Alan Craig. Alan Craig falls off, we'll bring in Matt Adams. We haven't had a good second baseman in years, perfect. We'll conjure Colton Wong out of the ether. They just do that, mm-hmm. and that makes any manager's job easier. But maybe it's possible, despite the fact that they've obviously won a World Series under Matheny, that they'd have more than one World Series under somebody else. Certainly conceivable.
That's very true. Jonah, we appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much, as always.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jonah Carey. I don't even really know if Jonah Carey needs any introduction. Jonah Carey from Grantland. He's written a book on the Rays, The Extra 2%, which is a tremendous book. And, of course, he's written the book on the Expos as well. And, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what transpires in Tampa off the field this year. I don't think, and I've said this in the past, that I don't think baseball will return to Montreal anytime soon. But I've also been told, I wrote this in Sportsnet.ca, I've also been told that baseball, with a new commissioner, that Rob Manfred has kind of given the high sign to Stuart Sternberg, the owner of the Rays, that we want to make one more push, get public funding for a ballpark in Tampa. And whether it takes a year or 2 years, we want to do that. The lease at Tropicana Field expires something like 2027. But, I mean, that's a moot point. You can cut a check to get out of that. And baseball has shown in the past that it will cut a check to get out of dicey situations. I mean, they loaned Jeffrey Loria money as part of that franchise swap back when the Expos left town. They paid Jeffrey Loria. They essentially funded his purchase of the Florida Marlins, the then Florida Marlins, as a result of his threat to take them to court over the possibility of contraction. So baseball will cut a check in order to get out of a messy situation. And that's really where I think we are right now. I think a lot has to happen before there's a baseball team in Montreal. Tampa Bay has to exhaust all options. And that mainly is building a ballpark in Tampa. I would think that the way this would come about is Stuart Sternberg, the owner, would not sell the team to somebody in Montreal. He would move the team himself, try to get a ballpark built. Clearly, having local partners on board with you would make that a lot easier. And as Jonah Carey pointed out, the backdrop here, in the background, is the fact that Quebec has been fairly reluctant to put public money into building stadia. So that would be a kind of an impediment to possibly moving there. But you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to see the way forward for baseball in Montreal. I'm not saying it's on the verge of happening, but I'm saying that I and other people believe that, as I phrased it on Sportsnet the other day, the ball has been moved a lot farther in that direction this past year than we may have been led to believe. Now, that may only be from the goal line to the 5-yard line or the goal line to the 10-yard line, but it's on the table. 2 years ago, it was not on the table. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll continue our look at the World Series. Game six goes tonight in Kansas City. The San Francisco Giants looking to win their third World Series in 5 years. We'll have the game for you at 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet Ontario. Mike Wilner at 7 o'clock will have a special one-hour pregame, his Blue Jay a day pregame. Aaron Sanchez will join Mike Wilner tonight. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports will join us. We'll continue to talk baseball right up to Hockey Central at noon on the Jeff Blair Show right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We got Hockey Central at noon is right around the corner. The Leafs, the Buffalo Sabres will play tonight. I'm sure the boys will have a lot to talk about. Couple of hits in the New York Rangers-Minnesota Wild game. One in particular by John Moore that will result in a hearing with the NHL's player safety folks. Probably a suspension. Chris Kreider also, I would imagine, possibly, perhaps, would be due an appearance as well, though we haven't heard anything on that. Anyhow, either way, Hockey Central at noon, they'll get you set for that. Tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario, we will have Game 6 of the World Series. The San Francisco Giants looking to win their third World Series in 5 years. Mike Wilner will have his Blue Jay a Day. We've got to come up with another name for this. His Blue Jay a Day pregame show at 7 o'clock. Aaron Sanchez joining Mike to take your calls. I've got to think the Kansas City Royals have the San Francisco Giants right where they want them. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We'll see if he feels the same way. In between orders for Oklahoma Joes. I know you're taking them on Twitter, Mr. Passan. The Royals have San Francisco right where they want them, don't they?
Can I say something first? You know, your lack of presence in the baseball postseason these days really sucks.
Yeah, I know it
like,
does.
It is a lesser time without you around, and it bums me out because, like, the entire crew. You have to understand, when I was like 24 years old and just getting started in this baseball writing thing, Jeff Blair and a couple of other writers graciously took my young, ignorant ass in. And
you had a good expense account. That was why.
I was in a newspaper at the time. It wasn't that good. But they were very nice to me. And now, like, no one's left. Like, I'm the only one from that era who is still around at these events. And I miss you, man. I want to have some barbecue with you today, and you're too freaking big time for me.
No, I don't know if it's too freaking big time or I've just kind of disappeared, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah,
barbecue would be good. Barbecue would be good. Tell me about, before we get to the unimportant baseball stuff, why Oklahoma Joes? I have been there, and I've been to a couple of other places in Kansas City, and it's top notch. I'm not saying why Oklahoma Joe's over any other place, but what is it about Oklahoma Joe's that makes it such a cultural icon?
Well, I think for most people, it's originally like the experience. It's in a gas station,
mm-hmm.
You know, and being in a gas station like next to a giant, and I mean giant display of disc golf frisbees. And you can, like, buy a pack of cigarettes over your shoulder. And, I mean, the ambiance there is like classic barbecue joint trashiness. It's wonderful like that. But the reason that the food there is so good is it is never bad. And what I mean by that is it is so remarkably consistent. I have never had a bad piece of meat at Oklahoma Joe's. I have had bad meat at LC's and at Gates and at Bryant's. and even at Jack Stack. But never have I not had a well above average meal at Oklahoma Joe's. And so the consistency matters. You know, like I've sent people to LC's, which is by the ballpark. And LC's on its fine days is the best barbecue in Kansas City. But if you happen to send someone there on one of its not so fine days, it's embarrassing because the food's just not very good then. You want to ensure your people have a good experience, and I have never had a bad Joe's experience before.
What separates Oklahoma barbecue from other barbecue?
This isn't Oklahoma barbecue. It's Kansas City barbecue.
Kansas City.
I think Kansas City barbecue is best because of the cuts that they use. To me, the burnt end is the finest piece of barbecue that there possibly is. It is better than ribs. It is better than just a regular smoked brisket. It is better than pulled pork. And Kansas City does burnt ends better than anybody. And the way that burnt ends are done is there are two different, and I hate to get all culinary here, there are two different pieces of a brisket. There's one that gets smoked just a normal amount of time, and there's another that gets smoked, separated, and then re-smoked again. Those pieces get chopped up, and they're all crispy and charry and wonderfully fatty and delicious, and they get turned into burnt ends, and it is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
The only two places I've had barbecue that I've actually wept, one was Oklahoma Joe's, the other was Dreamland.
Yeah, Dreamland will make you cry. I mean, look, they do it well down in Tennessee. They do it in Texas. They do it in Alabama. They do it in South Carolina. But for my money, Kansas City's got them all beat.
All right, let's talk baseball now that you've got me ready for lunch. The Royals, they have San Francisco exactly where they want them, don't they? Down 3-2. History's on their side.
Down three. I think that they'd prefer to be up 3-2, or they'd prefer to have the series over at this point. But, you know, Richard Justice had a very interesting statistic on Twitter earlier today that home teams in games 6 and 7 of the World Series, the last 25 games, home teams are 22-3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that the Kansas City Royals are going to go out and win these two games. It doesn't mean that the Royals are going to have a repeat of 1985 where they win 6 and 7 at home. But I think that everything is in their favor right now, particularly for game 6 where they've got the superior starter going out there. And in game 7, I think, is going to happen, and I think it's going to be a whopper of a game as well with Bumgarner lurking in the background and wondering just how long he can go on – what would it be, 2 days?
Mm-hmm.
2 days rest, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be a pretty ridiculous turnaround, but look, it's going to be for a world championship, and so that's the type of thing that you do, and that's what makes Madison Bumgarner as great as he is and as wonderful as he's been in this postseason. And I think that these next 2 days are going to be about as good as you can get for baseball.
What's Billy Butler's presence going to mean to this lineup?
I think it helps. He's not the Billy Butler that he once was, though. I mean, he doesn't hit for the power that he once did. And there was a point in the middle of the season where there was a question if Billy Butler should even be in the lineup anymore. I think that the fact the Giants get the counter with Michael Morse, frankly, evens out the Billy Butler factor, if not gives the Giants a little bit more of an advantage, because that's another bat in the middle of a lineup that is significantly stronger than the Royals. You know, when you're 3-4-5, whatever order they're in goes Posey, Pence, Sandoval, or Posey, Sandoval, Pence, there's quite a bit of pop right there compared to a Royals lineup where you just don't know where you're going to get that power from. They haven't been feeding fastballs to Eric Hosmer, and he's struggled this series. They have been feeding fastballs to Alex Gordon, and he's struggled in this series. And so when your 2-4 hitters are having as much trouble as they are, and when your 3-hitter in Lorenzo Cain is more of a single-double guy than a home run threat, you're going to have trouble scoring runs, and that's going to be the biggest factor, I think, for the Royals. Can they give Yordano Ventura enough support and enough breathing room?
How do you think Bruce Bochy uses Yusmeiro Petit tonight? I don't know if you ever managed with Game 7 in the back of your mind, but, you know, as you say, you could have Bumgarner. Do you think he just, is it just business as usual for Bosch when it comes to Petit?
I don't think so. I think he is remarkably aggressive with Petit tonight. And I'm not saying that Jake Peavy is going to get a first-inning hook like C.J. Wilson did necessarily in Game 3 of the ALDS, but I think if Jake Peavy runs into any trouble, Yusmeiro Petit will be up immediately, and that it would be a smart thing to do because he does have Bumgarner in the tank for tomorrow, and it is an all-hands-on-deck game. You cannot sit around and wait for your pitchers at this point in the season. You have to be aggressive with them, and it's the same reason that I think the Royals could go with Jason Vargas very early tonight because you just can't afford to lose this.
Mr. Passan, it was good of you to do this. Enjoy your barbecue. Enjoy Game 6 and Game 7.
I will do both. Thank you, and we do miss you again. Have a good show and enjoy that lunch.
Thank you. That is Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. One of the best. The best traveling companions, one of the best dinner companions. And one of the best après dinner companions, too. And Game 6 goes tonight. From Kansas City, Mike Wilner will have the J&A pregame show at 7 o'clock with Aaron Sanchez. First pitch at 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Ontario. Game 7, if necessary, tomorrow. And I called the Giants in 6, so I'd really, 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 really like to get this one right. I believe it would be the second prediction I've made this postseason that would have come true. And, however, having said that, something tells me that we are more than likely going to be back tomorrow for a seventh game. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show today. Hockey Central at noon is next. Darren Millard, Nick Kiprios, Doug McLean will be joined by Damian Cox. A lot to talk about. The Edmonton Oilers winning their fourth game in a row, shutting out the Montreal Canadiens. A little bit of argy bargy in the Minnesota Wild New York Rangers game. And of course, the never-ending soap opera that is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Hockey Central at noon is next. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.